Yeah. But it's good that things are progressing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy about it.
One thing I was going to say, and I just hit record, because I noticed last time there was some stuff that I wish I had recorded before, and then I hit record and we started talking about the Peeping Toms and the pies. That was great, and I'm like, I'm really glad I hit record on that, because otherwise it would have all been wasted. But one thing I noticed about the show is, as I'm going back and thinking about him and listening to him, and like Rachel and I are listening to him, because at like episode 20, we at the very end we were talking about Eric Estrada and looking at his Twitter feed.
Yeah,
and I was like, we seem to look at Twitter feeds a lot at the end of shows. Maybe we'll do a lot more of that in the next 20 episodes. Maybe we'll try to do something different. And I feel like since then
we haven't done it,
but it's been. I think now the show is turning into more of what it will actually be. Like, 20 episodes was, like, us just fucking around trying to figure out what we were good at doing, and I, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that as good as some of the episodes were in the first 20, I think that lately we've been hitting our stride more.
Yeah.
And in the last 10 or so. Yeah.
And it hasn't always been, like, hilarious, but it's been pretty good.
Well, I think in general it's been better quality, at least. Yeah. Just the talk, it's been, and if it hasn't been like hilarious, it's been interesting.
Yeah, I think we've gotten a bit more comfortable, so kudos to us.
We're fucking great.
I had another thought I was just gonna say, and I can't remember what the fuck it was.
You fucked up.
Fuck it. Shit, that's gonna bother me now.
Was it about pumpkin muffins from Dunkin' Donuts?
No.
They are fantastic.
Really?
I had another one today, and I really shouldn't. Like, even the stump is delicious. It's like, it's still like a stump of buttery, pumpkin-y goodness. It's amazing. I don't know how they do it.
You know what? I'll have to give that a try, because I'm not a big fan of pumpkin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just don't like it.
So, like, pumpkin bread, you're not really into pumpkin bread?
No, not really.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, if you're not really a fan of pumpkin bread, you might not be a huge fan of this. But, like, the top, it's got kind of, like, icing on it. And
well, I don't know if I've ever had pumpkin bread. I don't know if it's ever been offered to me.
Oh, okay.
Now that I think about it. But, like I don't really like pumpkin pie. Like, I don't really like pumpkin-flavored beer. Like, anything with pumpkin in it, people are like, oh, it has pumpkin in it? I'm like, eh.
I'm not a huge... I do like pumpkin beer. I'm not into pumpkin pie. It just doesn't do it for me. Mm. Pumpkin bread, I love. My mom makes chocolate chip pumpkin bread. Oh, my God. It is so fucking good.
That sounds like it might be... It sounds like it would have a good balance to it, I think. So.
It does. It really does. And then I love the pumpkin muffin. It's so good. I mean, obviously, a fucking million places have it now. But, you know, I live in Boston, so I go to Dunkin' Donuts before work.
Yeah.
There's no.
There's like eight of them on the way, so.
There's at least two. And I live 2 minutes from my my work.
Yeah. There's one that I know of. And then. There's one in the Stop and Shop.
Yep. Yeah. There's the one basically like down the right, like basically at like the end of my street on the way there. And then there's another one in the Stop and Shop. And then there's another one right around the corner from where. So within very quick walking distance. So
yeah,
there's basically three, like practically on my way to work. And I have the quickest commute imaginable.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't even drive. it's kind of disgusting. Like, I bet I would disgust people in other countries with the fact that I drive to work.
Probably. Because where your house is, if you put their house there and then where you put work is, like, that's where fresh water is for them, so.
Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous. Like, I can't even believe I – you know what? I wear a shirt and tie. I'm not – I can't be walking. That's crazy. I'll be sweating. It's absolute insanity. What kind of world would this be if I had to walk in dress pants and dress shoes to work? Now, one might suggest that I just wear sneakers on my way and change, but
– Do you want to be that guy?
No, no. Plus, I'd have to leave earlier. I can't do that.
That's ridiculous.
Inconvenience myself.
Where I used to live in Somerville, on my way to work, there was – I would pass one Dunkin' Donuts on the main road, and then I would get up to a corner before going on the highway. And there was a Dunkin' Donuts at the Hess station at the corner. There was a Dunkin' Donuts to my right – and then there was a Stop and Shop that also had a Dunkin' Donuts in it. And that was like less than a mile, or maybe a mile. So then I would get on the highway, and there wouldn't be any Dunkin' Donuts on the highway.
Amazing.
But I would see them, so I could easily pull off and hit many of them. But then as soon as I would get off the highway, I could go into the Dunkin' Donuts that was right there.
Oh, the one at work, yep.
Yeah, that's pretty much at work. So I used to pass like five.
Oh, it's absurd. If you just go downtown Boston and just walk for more than 10 minutes, you'll pass about six Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh yeah. I don't understand how they can all possibly stay in business.
That's the amazing thing. They're all busy. There's people in every single one getting coffee. I don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, well, you know what? I know they must be putting something in the fucking coffee, because I have to. I have like three coffees a day. It's absurd.
Well, I think that's just the caffeine.
No, that's probably true. But
here's my day. Usually, I will make a pot of coffee in the morning. Well, I should say like half a pot, because I have like the big, you know, 12 cups, but I don't make all 12 cups. I do like six. But I'll drink that, and then I'll say about 6 hours later, I'm like, I should make some more coffee. And 9 times out of 10, I usually do end up making another 6 cups of coffee and then drink all of that. So,
coffee is great. That's why I don't understand people that don't drink coffee, especially when you get like to a certain age. I mean, I get, you know, you're young, maybe you don't drink coffee. But after the age of like 20, what the fuck are you doing if you're not drinking coffee?
What do you mean young? You mean like a little kid? Or you mean like a teenager being like, coffee's an old man's game, all right?
You know, some people, they're
I'm
like,
not going to play by your coffee rules, man.
They're like, I don't like coffee. I don't drink coffee. And I'm like, go to hell. You don't drink coffee. If you don't drink coffee, I mean, like, what are you doing? Do you have a job? Because if you have a job, you're drinking coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what annoyed me so much about those 5-hour energy commercials, because the guy's like, oh, it's so much easier than coffee. I drink this in the morning. What are you talking about? You're a fucking adult. Go and get coffee on your way to work.
Well, and here's the other thing. He has, I believe in that commercial, this is the other thing that bothers me. In one of them, the coffee, because he goes to the coffee pot and he pulls out the empty pot and he's like, oh no, there's no time for coffee. I can't make it. It's one of those new coffee ones that you can just set a timer on.
Oh yeah.
So all you do is you set it up the night before, and in the morning you have coffee. That's what I do. My fiance gets up at like 5:30, 6 o'clock. I make the coffee the night before. I only have to set the timer once, and then until the power goes out or until I unplug the machine, I don't have to reset the timer. It's real fucking simple to do. So if you don't have time in the morning, asshole, in the 5-hour energy drink commercial, just do it. I didn't even have the instruction manual. I just figured it out. I used my brain.
The guy is clearly an idiot.
Yeah.
No time. Get up earlier.
Or just set the timer. Make the coffee the night before. I usually do it when I'm making dinner the night before, because I'm in the kitchen, I'm waiting for things to cook. I have a minute to put in a little paper cup, a little, you know, the filter, And then I can remember the word filter. But you just scoop in some cup. You just scoop in some coffee, you pour in some water, you hit the button to say delay brew, and you're done. It doesn't take that long.
It's so fucking arduous. I better go out and invest in some 5-hour energy instead, because it just sounds so goddamn difficult to make a pot of coffee.
Yeah, and you have so you have to have a 5-hour energy every single morning. So that means that you have to buy 5 packages of 2, because they only come in packages of 2.
So convenient. Oh, and I think they might sell packages of 4, but it's always an odd number.
but the two pack is like what, like $5?
Yeah, it's expensive. It's as much as coffee is.
If you go to buy a coffee, even if you get like the expensive bag of like coffee beans. Let's say you get the coffee beans and you have to grind it yourself, which I like.
8 o'clock coffee.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't get the 8 o'clock. Well, actually, I've tried the 8 o'clock coffee. It's not bad. But if you get the beans, I'd like to get the beans actually, because it's a little bit. It tastes differently. I like a stronger cup of coffee. Anyway, my parents. It's just funny because my parents make fun of me about it, because I go home and they're like, "Oh, you want to make some coffee for breakfast?" And I was like, all right, I guess I'll do it, because you guys aren't going to do it, and I need coffee, otherwise I'm going to be an asshole all day. So I make the coffee, and my dad's, like, stirring the coffee, and he goes, look, Carl, my spoon's standing up, it's so strong. And I'm like, oh, you know what, just drink the coffee, all right? Add some more milk to it.
This is so, just such an old person thing to say.
Where was I going with this? Oh, but even if you get those, it's like, the bag of it is like, we'll say $10. We'll round up. I think it's like usually 9-something or 8-something if you get in sale. We'll say $10 on average. So even if you get that, that's going to last you for probably about 2 weeks.
Right.
We'll say. If you have to get two weeks worth of 5-hour energy drinks, that is going to cost you $35.
It's absurd. It's too expensive.
And there's a weird sheriff cowboy.
Oh, that stupid sheriff. He pisses me off. He pisses me right off. I started naysaying him on Twitter, and he came after me. Or at least some guy named the 5-Hour Energy Cowboy.
Yeah, I don't think it was really him, but
I know. But he did not like me. And he didn't like you either, because you started instigating him. Mm-hmm. He was a dick. But 5-Hour Energy, listen, it has its place. I do use it once in a while, especially like, you know, if you were to come up to Boston and I knew you were staying the night, so I knew we were going to get all sorts of nuts and be drinking until 5 a.m.
Yeah.
I would, when I go to the liquor store, such a rare occurrence, I would grab a couple. At least one, so that I could, you know, have it later on and I last through the night. That's what I use 5-Hour Energy for. Not in the morning.
Yeah.
I enjoy my coffee. Like, it's not even just – like, the thing is with the 5-Hour Energy commercials, they make it seem like it's a process. Like, it's – oh, man, you're going to be drinking that coffee? Oh, Jesus. It's good. I like it.
Yeah.
I enjoy my coffee in the morning. When I'm sitting at my desk typing away, I'm so glad that I got a big cup of coffee next to me.
Oh, yeah. It's just nice. It just tastes good. I think if my coffee tasted exactly the same and there was no caffeine in it, I would probably enjoy it just as much.
I agree. I would still drink it.
I would be like, this is fantastic.
But not only that, it's just you're supposed to, okay? Stop being a fucking pussy and drink a cup of coffee.
Or
it's what you're supposed to do.
Or learn how to set the fucking coffee machine to make it for you.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
It's really not hard.
It's not complicated at all. You set the fucking timer. You also learn not to oversleep because you're a fucking adult.
Right. Wake up and go to work. What are you, stupid?
Who's oversleeping so much that you don't have enough time to make coffee?
I know. You can't throw in the pot before you go in the fucking shower. Would you not shower? Are you that late? Are you that much of a disgusting animal that you didn't shower? Throw on the pot, go in the shower, shower real quick. By the time you get out, the coffee will be ready. Grab a cup and go. Get a to-go cup.
Yeah. Buy one of those.
This is not fucking rocket science.
And in the time that it takes you to go into the kitchen, grab the coffee pot, stare at it like it's a fucking mystical object that you don't understand. Like it's the cosmic cube and you're like, oh my God, what am I supposed to do with this? You could have just made the coffee. Just do it.
What a bunch of assholes.
The only thing missing from that scene is that it wasn't in black and white and there wasn't a big red X that slammed down on the screen. Like all those
other... You have no time in the morning?
No time for coffee?
It shows the guy trying to make it and he's just spilling it everywhere. Does this happen to you?
For whatever reason, he's just shaking it.
What are you a fucking jackass?
He turns around and he's like, oh no, my clothes are ruined. I spilled coffee on them because I'm an idiot.
Now I gotta get changed again. Ugh.
I hate those commercials. Do you not know how to cook an egg? Are you dumb when it comes to pasta?
All these difficult things. You know what? It's not a bad product. It's just who's ever creating the advertisements is a fucking idiot.
Well, yeah, it's the same fucking guy. Guaranteed it's the same asshole.
Ugh.
It's the same guy that can't do any of this shit.
Oh, yeah.
So he just builds commercials based around stuff he can't do. Make himself feel better.
Like the ones for the nonstick pans, right? And they show the guy trying to – with the spatula and he's trying to get the fucking eggs out of the pan. And like – and it's all just like burnt on and stuck. Would you put some fucking butter in the pan first?
Yeah.
Take 10 seconds to let the butter melt with some Pam or something. What the fuck is wrong with you? Who taught you how to cook eggs?
Why don't you just not cook it for 10 minutes longer than you're supposed to?
That too. Obviously, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. Oh, so all of a sudden you got the nonstick pan. That's not going to save the fact that you're a fucking retard.
Yeah.
I don't know.
it's like the Seinfeld bit where he talks about he sees all the laundry commercials and he's talking about if you have, you know, it gets out blood and dirt and grease and grass, and he's like, if you have all that stuff on your clothes, laundry isn't your biggest concern.
He's like, you got blood stains everywhere. That's
if you can't figure out how to make coffee, cook an egg, do laundry, vacuum, like, water your plants, any of this fucking shit, like, you should probably get yourself checked out for other issues.
Yeah.
Get yourself checked for Alzheimer's. Like,
who are these people?
Who can't do this stuff? Yeah, I like when they have to, like, obviously do the way over acting.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the guy with the eggs, like, he's like, uh-oh, I can't get it out. But, like, he starts to get it out, so he just starts hacking with the spatula.
Oh, and he's just all, like, he's holding the fucking spatula in the pan. He looks like he's fucking, I can't think of his name right now. What's his face?
Gordon Ramsay?
No. He's all shaking. Michael J. Fox. He's all shaking everywhere.
No, Michael J. Fox has that shit under control now.
Does he?
Yeah. He's actually going back to television.
I heard that, actually.
Because there's new medication that gets it under control for him.
Good, good. I love Michael J. Fox. I was so sad to see him go. Not go, but, you know, leave TV.
Yeah. No.
But anyways, yeah, no, these fucking commercials, like, seriously, like, when people in the rest of the world think that Americans are idiots, that's why. It's because we got people that don't know how to cook eggs. And you know what? I can't even blame them.
Yeah. They don't have those commercials in other parts of the world.
Well, I don't know.
Well, I mean, in some places they don't. Do you have trouble carrying water back to your village for survival? And it's just like a guy carrying on his head and he just dumps it.
I was just going to say, that big basket on your head hurt?
What product would that be for? I don't know.
I don't know.
I guess something with wheels, but...
Why don't you buy a cart? They're selling mules with carts.
Or just, no, it's just a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, that would be good. I bet a lot of... Do you think those people with the things on the heads, do you think they've ever heard of a wheelbarrow? I don't think they have. I feel
they
like
probably no. I think they have. I think the problem is the terrain.
They don't like them.
No, the terrain that they have to go through.
Yeah, you might be right.
But have you seen the commercial? I think it's for like a communications network. Like, I don't know if it's like AT&T like business or if it's like you know, like Cisco Systems or something like that. I feel it has to do with getting your business connected around the world or something, but it starts off, I want to say, in like Italy, with like a guy on a bike and he has a giant pile of bread on his head.
Oh yeah.
and he's riding the bike around and he has the giant pile of bread on a huge platter on his head. But my favorite part is the end of the commercial, because he's like driving through Africa or whatever. And he sees one of those women carrying the basket on his head, and he gives like a little nod, like, "Hey, what's up? We both have stuff on our head."
Hey, I'm just like you.
Except I'm on a bike, so.
Yes, I have seen that. I have no idea what it's for. I have no idea why. I mean,
I've seen it a couple times, and I wanted to see what it was for, and they were talking about keeping things connected. But then, again, the ending scene got me, and I got distracted. I couldn't remember what it was for. But I was like, that is such a douche move at the end of that commercial.
Hey, what's up?
You
carry shit on your head, too?
Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but we both got shit on our head, so you want to fuck?
It's how the song should actually go.
So, when we're recording this... Yesterday, the 18th, was the anniversary of Hendrix's death. And I thought today we should maybe talk about Hendrix a little bit, because I know we're both big fans.
Very big fans. I fucking love Hendrix.
There were a few things that I didn't realize, I guess, about him, because I started reading a little bit about him, and I was gonna read this article if I can find it here. I think I got it right here. Hang on, because it was from, I think it was, it said it was published the day after he passed, and it was from the UK, which I guess I didn't realize how big he was in the UK before he even came over to America. Because it was like it was a couple years.
Yeah. I guess I did kind of know that, but he died in the UK, right?
He died in the UK too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he, the only reason that he, I guess he actually even came over to, let's see, that's not it. He really even came over here was because Paul McCartney wanted to bring him over and wanted him to play at the Monterey Pop Festival, where he set his guitar on fire at the end.
That is an amazing performance, and I have the vinyl of him playing there.
As do I.
It is so good.
Yeah, I was rocking out to that yesterday. Okay, so this is from The Guardian. But yeah, this is from September 19th, day after 1970, from The Guardian. It's pretty short, so there's a couple things that I'm going to stop and point out, though. Jimi Hendrix, who died in London in September... I'm reading it in a weird format, so that's just the caption for the picture, but it looks like it's part of the article. It starts off with a quote. "Thanks for being so patient. Next time, we will really try and get it together." And then the quote ends, "Spoken 2 hours before cold Sunday dawn, 3 weeks ago at the Isle of Wight. These words have become Jimi Hendrix's final farewell to his British audience." Those were his last words to his fans. Thanks for being so patient. Next time we'll really try and get it together. So I guess he was like, I know I didn't play well.
It's weird.
And then he died. Looking back, 1967 was maybe the greatest year for British rock and roll. And it was the year of Jimi Hendrix, part Cherokee, part American Negro. Which definitely says this in time, they say Negro.
it was very 1967.
Years before that, after a parachute injury had led to his discharge from the U.S. Army Airborne, which is something I want to touch on, he played backing guitar with several American rhythm and blues acts, notably with Little Richard. He wasn't happy with Richard. That's a quote from Hendrix. He wouldn't let me wear frilly shirts on stage, just those shiny silk suits, he said. I'm the only one allowed to be pretty. That's what Little Richard said.
I can totally see Little Richard saying that.
In August 1966, Chaz Chandler, who'd previously played with the Animals, saw Jimmy perform in Greenwich Village. Chaz, interviewed by John Marshall, said, I saw Jimmy as the governor rebel of all time. I mean, he may be nice as ninepence as a bloke. I don't know what that means. Mind, but here was a guy who was going to turn on all the chicks, crucify every blues guitarist in the world. I mean, I'm just reading this again. I mean, he may be nice as ninepence as a bloke. Mind, but here... So I guess he was just saying he looked like a stand-up guy. He may be a real nice guy, but mind you, but... Anyway. Having gotten nowhere in the U.S., Jimmy's first single, Hey Joe, was released in December 1966. A year later, Melody Maker readers voted him the world's number one rock musician. His image was super shade and super hippie combined. He was Muddy Waters' Hoochie Coochie Man, the voodoo myth of magic male potency, alive and pulsating on stage, playing his guitar with his teeth, setting it alight, and flicking his tongue at the ladies as he sang Wild Thing, I'm Coming to Get You, with an enormous wicked grin. His spectacular technicolor exoticism made his fortune, and with The Who, that of track records, too. On the way for the British kids, he established that black was beautiful. He certainly did. For years, NAACP supporters had been putting the proposition that blacks were just the same as anyone else. In a singular way, Jimmy gave this drab notion the lie. He developed a style of clothes which was part gypsy, part bandito. At the public music hall in Cleveland, Ohio, 18 months ago, he wore black boots, silver-belted denims, Navajo vests, and purple velvet gaucho hat on his enormous Afro-style hair. On the hat was a button saying, let's brag a little. So I thought that was weird that they recounted what he wore. But I guess it kind of makes the point.
I don't know. I think part of it is probably we look back at we look at him now, and I don't necessarily think that anything that he wore was that ridiculous. I mean, obviously I wouldn't wear a lot of the shit that he did, but like it doesn't seem nearly as outrageous now as I'm sure it did then.
That's probably true, yeah. There was the other part. Well, actually, hang on. Let me just read the last paragraph, and then I'll go back. His showmanship and his pyrotechnic guitar style, which came to owe little to the blues guitar greats, was crucial to his act, but he was also a very considerable composer of rock songs. With Steve Miller, he invented space rock, rock music, which consciously explored new notions of space and time inspired by astronauts and by the speed up of the mental and physical world that it implied by electricity. For years, NAACP supporters had been putting the proposition that blacks were just the same as anyone else. In his singular way, Jimmy gave this drab notion the lie. I'm not sure I get what they're saying in that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what they're saying with that either, because if they were to state the NAACP was trying to say that Black was equal to, I could almost see them saying that he gave it the lie as in it's more than equal. You know, like he exceeded everything.
That's what I was thinking that they were going for.
But it said Black is beautiful.
No, he said that was the line before.
Right, but it gave that the lie.
But that's for
That's
for NAACP supporters had been putting the proposition that Blacks were just the same as anyone else. So yeah, I think that what he's saying
just the same.
Yeah, I think they're saying that he made it seem that they were better or could surpass.
Okay. That's a really weird way to state it.
That is. I don't know. Maybe that's kind of like a British way of stating it. Kind of like saying he's nice as ninepence.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never said that, nor have I ever heard anyone say that.
I'm going to start using that. Greg, you're nice as ninepence.
Oh, thank you.
As a bloke.
As a bloke. I watch a lot of Top Gear, and I've never heard that.
I didn't realize he was in the Airborne.
I knew he
had joined the Army because he'd get in trouble with the law, and what they used to do was say, well, you can go to jail or join the Army. They don't do that anymore, though, do they?
No, I don't think so.
But I was looking it up. I was looking up for more information on that, and I was looking on Wikipedia. And Wikipedia has his actual, like a copy of his actual discharge paper. And this is why they requested his discharge from service, not because he was in a parachuting accident. It says, behavior problems, requires excessive supervision while on duty, little regard for regulations, apprehended masturbating in platoon area while supposed to be on detail.
Wow.
Yeah, that is way cooler than a parachuting accident.
I mean, you know, I assumed he probably had issues with authority and was like to cause trouble. Like, that makes a lot of sense. Caught masturbating while supposed to be on detail? That's fantastic.
Yeah. I was reading a lot about him yesterday. I don't remember honestly where it was, but I want to say he was on the what was that show? Was it the Dick Cavett Show? I think that's the guy's name.
God, I'm not sure.
But he used to do like the old talk show, like the Letterman or
yeah.
But he actually continued saying, because they would ask him about it, and I guess at one point he said that that the parachuting accident was true. Because I guess he didn't want people to know that he was caught masturbating.
Yeah, that's probably also a hard thing to explain on
TV. Yeah.
Especially in the 60s.
I think they probably could have gotten away with it in the 60s.
Yeah, maybe in England he could have referred to it as wanking.
Well, that's true. Well, no, but the Dick Cavett Show was the U.S., wasn't it?
I'm not sure. To be honest, I really don't know.
Yeah, it was. But then at one point you had, on Carson, you had, what was her face? You know, one of the old actresses talking to him about a cat on his lap and saying, and she said to him, like, you want to pet my pussy or something?
That's crazy.
You ever see that clip?
No, I don't think I have.
I'm trying to remember. I want to say it was like Zsa Zsa Gabor or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't Carol Burnett?
No, I don't think it was Carol Burnett. No, I think it was Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, she was a tramp.
But I think later on he's relaying the story with Jane Fonda.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Zsa Zsa Gabor, but it was the clip that I've seen, because I don't think they have the I guess they don't have the clip of him with Zsa Zsa Gabor, but they have the clip of him talking about it with Jane Fonda.
I'm surprised I never heard of that.
Yeah, look it up.
Because I'm pretty cultured when it comes to stuff like that. I know about the Johnny Carson.
So the other thing that I found, I mean, that article was pretty short, but I thought it was interesting. Like, it's obviously very dated because of the terms that they use, but it's interesting because like some of the stuff that we now know isn't true.
No, we know much more now than, I mean, you said this was written, was the day after?
That was the day after.
Yeah.
The other thing that I found was actually the Rolling Stone piece, which came out the following October. I think it was like a month later. What's very interesting about this one is they're upfront about it. They say the exact nature of the death is still vague in a coroner's inquest to be held in London September 30th. Police, however, say it was a drug overdose. They say he took 9 sleeping pills and died of suffocation through vomit. Now, what's amazing, and I don't think I ever heard about this, but according to Eric Burden of The Animals, he kept telling people that it was a suicide.
Really?
Yeah. Did you ever hear of that?
No.
So in this article, and it's in, I think I just typed in like Jimi Hendrix Rolling Stone and found it. But it says, the next paragraph says, according to Eric Burden, Hendrix left behind for the girlfriend in whose apartment he died what Burden called a suicide note, which was a poem several pages in length. The poem is now in the possession of Burden, the last musician with whom Hendrix played before he died. So this was like a month later, and they were saying it was a suicide. And this guy was going around saying it was a suicide. His personal manager says, I don't believe it was a suicide. I just don't believe Jimi Hendrix left Eric Burden his legacy for him to carry on. Jimi Hendrix is a very unique individual. And then he says, I could show you 20 of them. He's talking about papers and poems and stuff that Jimmy had written. And he goes, I could show you 20 of them that could be interpreted as a suicide note.
Yeah.
Which seems like very – I mean, any, I think any musician or really I think any writer, you jot something down and it could be considered like a suicide note.
And I also think that the way Jimi Hendrix was, I think he very much embraced the idea of death, and not in a way that I think he wanted to die, but I don't think he had a fear of it. And I think that a lot of his songs, he talks about death, and he talks about kind of leaving your body, and whether or not it's in a drug sense or a final, like, you know, dying sense or anything like that is totally up to interpretation. And I can see a lot of the stuff that he wrote as being interpreted as, you know, being about death or his own death.
Yeah. Yeah, and
I don't think he ever shied away from the topic.
No, and I think pretty much anybody who's trying to convey a message and tell people things has to touch upon that topic at some point, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a million things that you could – I mean, even just in some of his popular songs, I mean, you know – I mean, if you really wanted to, you could talk about Voodoo Child and take the line about kissing the sky, about dying and going to heaven. Like, if you really wanted to take it that way. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of...
And there's another line, somewhere a queen is weeping, somewhere a king has no wife.
Yeah.
That could easily... If that was just written on a piece of paper next to him, you could totally think that that was something related to that. But it could have just been something that he thought of.
Exactly. Like,
you know, while he was passing out.
Yeah. I know that he was at a party that the night he died.
Yeah.
And I know that I forget who it was that was talking about it. But they were saying that he drank just an obscene amount of wine, I think it was. Like, I forget how much they estimated it, but they were like, he drank so much fucking wine.
Yeah, yeah. And then they say that by the time that they found him the next day, there wasn't a lot of wine in the system.
Really? Yeah.
There's the conflicting reports on that, but yeah, they were saying that they didn't find really any other drugs, just the wine.
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, it was mostly booze.
It was booze, and then the fact that he took nine sleeping pills, and I guess the dosage for that brand is supposed to be like somewhere it said like a half a tablet to a full tablet, and he took like nine of them.
Right, right.
And then he was vomiting, and I guess he basically just asphyxiated on his vomit and then died. So obviously, I think it was an accident.
Yeah, I don't see how. I just obviously we didn't know him. Obviously, well, like yeah. We only know him through his music and through our love for his, you know, just his legend and everything. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it. I don't know. I just don't see it being on purpose.
No, this guy Burden says. I know he had been in a bad state for a year. I guess he had come out and he played a set with those guys at a local club. It says he went off stage and came back and played the background to Tobacco Road, and that was his last song. But then the next part says Hendrix had been for some time attempting to become more independent in his business affairs. He saw Electric Lady as a step toward that goal. So that was the studio that he was starting on his own, his own recording studio. And it said somewhere else that he was planning on going back there a few days later because he wanted to finish up the new album. And he was going to do – they needed to do the mastering for that, and he was going to do that himself. But the weird thing that this guy Burton says is he realized that the only way he could get what he wanted, helping the Panthers and setting up an anti-ghetto project in Harlem – was to die and hope that someone else would take care of the business for him using the things that he left behind, his music and his last poem, to make the money. Huh. I don't know who this guy is, but he's an asshole. Like, this guy is just ridiculous. I wouldn't expect this guy to exist in 1970. I would feel like he was from today trying to cash in on shit.
It's some fucking swindler.
Yeah, like he's just like, well, you know, I was a personal friend, so, because you always get those assholes when something big happens and they're like, well, I knew him in high school, so I'll do a report for you.
I'm gonna cash in on this.
Yeah, but everything else seems to be contradicting. The article is actually pretty well written. Clearly, like, this guy's just trying to cash it, and they keep putting, like, counterpoints to show that the guy's just being an idiot. They say at first none of his Jimmy's friends would comment, so I think there was it was one of those things where they were like, everyone was like, well, I guess he could have. Like, he was probably, I have the feeling he was probably in, like, a very doubtful place.
Right, right.
But this is a guy who revolutionized how the electric guitar was played, and adding like the pedals and the other effects and doing all this other stuff to it that affected everybody from that point on. But he started it himself, and he was trying to do more himself, so I don't see him being like, well, it's not working yet, so fuck it.
Yeah, I don't know, for someone to get that far into completely changing the world of music, I don't see as someone giving up. It just doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, you know what? I guess I don't really know, but it just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, and definitely what this guy is saying doesn't really make any sense, because I don't think he would realize that the only way he could get what he wanted was to die. Because this guy, because he was 27,
right?
And I can't tell you how upset I am by the fact that people now include in that Forever 27 club Amy Winehouse.
Oh, It's infuriating.
Because everybody else in that club has revolutionized and changed music one way or another.
I mean, please include, you know, Jim Morrison and Kurt Cobain and whoever else.
Janis Joplin is the other one.
Joplin, yeah. I mean, but Christ almighty. Amy Winehouse.
Amy Winehouse. She's got a good voice, but she unfortunately she did nothing to change music. And everybody everybody else in that group had such a powerful impact on things.
Yeah. I don't think any more so than Hendrix, though.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think Hendrix, and then I would say probably second would probably be Cobain, because of all the bands that are around now that say that they were inspired by Cobain.
Right. Yeah, no, I would say that's fair, yeah.
I mean, Janis Joplin did a lot, but her I don't hear as really even reference as much, or Morrison even. You know what I mean? But a lot of popular bands today say that they were really influenced by Nirvana and Cobain. But one part that I thought was funny was because nobody had a complete report, the London Press chose to carry instead pure sensationalism. One Sunday paper had an exclusive story by a groupie, somebody else who just really wanted to cash in, which told of a five-in-a-bed orgy with Hendrix.
And this is supposedly, what, the night he died, or
yeah,
just
I guess
in general?
So. I guess so, yeah. In America, the first report, and this blew my mind reading this, spread across the country primarily by FM radio.
Really?
Yeah, so in 1970, people were still listening to the radio and getting news of his death. Like, wow. That's, yeah, I was like, I would have, like, somebody dies now, I'm going to get an alert on my phone. Or I'm going to be watching TV and it's going to come up. Like, I'm not going to hear it on the radio.
Yeah, I get my little news updates, or I see it on the Twitter or something.
Yeah. Was that... But the reports are saying that he died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah, that's... No. Is that... You said that's what the London Times went with?
The heroin overdose was America.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I just he was so good, and this goes back to I think what we were talking about in the last episode, like the kind of the people who are doing things themselves.
Oh yeah, yeah. As far as producing and you know, just doing all the production yourself and getting it out there, and yeah,
yeah. I think you can see a lot of that start with Hendrix even.
Absolutely, because I think when Hendrix really first came about, you know, I don't think anyone really wanted to have anything to do with him. And or it's not even that, but it's that people just – he wasn't worth the risk, and people just couldn't see his genius. Yeah. Or maybe they could, but they just said, you know, it's – I can't invest in this. I can't get behind this.
Well, he didn't really become popular in America till after he became popular in the U.S.
You mean in England?
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
And I mean, really, Hendrix only had about 4 years of real popularity.
Yeah, but he during that time, he produced a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, he... And he did it all on his own, really.
Yeah, I mean he had some help along the way, but he did a lot of it himself, and he kind of just kept going. And one story that I had never heard that was in the Rolling Stones piece was they were talking about his dad, and Mr. Hendrix's dad recalled that Jimmy first became interested in music when he was 10 years old. His father remembers going to Jimmy's room one night in the dark and tripping over a broom. He asked Jimmy why the broom was there, since he obviously wasn't using it to clean up his room. "That's my guitar, Dad," Jimmy had answered. "I'm learning how to play it." So he was like, he was like,
fantastic.
I don't have a guitar. I want to play music though, so I'm just going to pretend that this broom is a guitar and I'm going to start going with it. But like he, and then I read something else, you know, he was trying to learn how to play with his teeth because that was a gimmick. So he was trying to actually play, like, he was the only one that actually really learned how to play with his teeth and like really like practice playing behind his back when everybody else was just kind of like making it up and kind of doing it. He was like, no, I'm actually going to do this right.
Right, right. I think about sometimes just his just pure ability, and I don't know, like, it sounds stupid, and like people always say, oh, it's this is like indescribable, or like I can't even explain this, or but like I listen to Hendrix sometimes and I literally can't even describe how good it is. Like I can't, like I try to compare it to anything else I've heard and I just can't do it. He's the best. He made the guitar sound like nothing else I've mm-hmm. ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So he was starting an idea called the Electric Church.
Mm-hmm.
Because he basically wanted people, like, listening to the electric guitar to or electric music to have, like, the emotions and spirituality that people get from going to church. He designed his music so that it would be able to go, and this is a quote from him, inside the soul of the person and awaken some kind of thing inside because there are so many sleeping people. And I read that and I was like, that is pretty much what he accomplished.
It really is.
There's just something so so different and so just fantastic about it.
The way he played, it was one of those things where, like, for instance, my favorite band ever is the Beatles, but my favorite artist ever is Jimi Hendrix.
Mm.
And on the one hand, when I listen to a Beatles song, I can sit there and I marvel at their ability to create a song, like a well-constructed, concise song that is perfectly structured, great lyrics, you know, just everything is exactly what you want in a pop song. Or, you know, and then obviously they went off and experimented with other shit and whatever, but they were just great songwriters. They knew exactly what they needed to do. And then on the other hand, you have Jimi Hendrix, who I listen to some of his songs and I don't care about structure. I don't care about time. Like, I just don't want them to end. Mm-hmm. Like, a perfect example is Little Wing. And Little Wing is a short-ass song.
Mm-hmm.
But it just – when I get into that song and when I hear him going on that guitar, I don't want it to end. And I just – I wish that song – was 20 minutes long. I wish it would just keep going. I wish he would just keep playing. And it's disappointing when it ends. And like, you don't, I don't want it to be concise. The same thing, you know, Voodoo Child is another example. Like, I don't want it to end. Like, I just want him to keep playing. I could listen to Jimi Hendrix play the guitar for hours. And it doesn't need to be structured. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, he had some kind of talent. He had the talent with the playing that has been unmatched, I would say. There are some that come close, but I would say his talent with the electric guitar and to make it do things that he makes it do things that nobody else can recreate.
Yeah, absolutely.
But to do that with the actual writing of the songs is just an unmatchable thing.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of people just, you know, and obviously I just went off and started talking about his guitar playing, but I think a lot of people will just be like, oh, he was a great guitarist. It's like, he wasn't just a great guitarist. He was a great songwriter. He was a great lyricist. His songs are fantastic. I mean, they're just, you know, he hated his voice. He, when he first originally started releasing records, he didn't want to sing. He wanted someone else to sing, and he would just play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who it was, but convinced him. They were like, no, you got a good voice. They were like, it's perfect for your music. You need to sing. And so he said, okay, you know, I'll go ahead and do it. And obviously it worked, but it just, I don't think enough people give him the credit he deserves for his songwriting and his lyrics.
Yeah, definitely not.
And I mean, obviously, to an extent, that all takes a back seat to his guitar playing. Like, I understand that. That'll always be the case. But I just, he was the complete package, whether or not people want to give him credit for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I don't know if anybody has ever come close. I think the only person that I can think of who is really a good complete package and is doing things that it's different than somebody else would be Jack White, but I wouldn't even put them on the same scale. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, you can say that they're – I agree. I mean, they're of maybe in the same vein, but – as much as I do like Jack White, he's no Jimi Hendrix.
No.
You know, I mean, even someone like John Lennon, who was an amazing lyricist and an amazing songwriter. And in those two facets, he might have been better than Hendrix.
Yeah.
But he wasn't really a good guitar player. I mean, he was okay. He was passable. But, you know, not even the greatest of the greats, you know, don't have everything down. You know, you can be great in two of the three, you know, or, you know, you can be great here and great there and still be amazing. But I really feel that Hendrix had it all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's so much more to talk about. But what I would like to do is read. I want to find like a good Hendrix biography.
Yeah.
Something that kind of compiles all this shit that I read. I'll have to do some research and find one. Then maybe I'll check it out, or we can both check it out and talk about that in the future.
That would be cool. Yeah, I should probably try and find one out.
Yeah, I'm sure there. My assumption is that there's a ton. So we should probably maybe I'll do some research and see if there's one that everybody says is kind of the definitive book.
Yeah, I can't say that I've ever heard of really anyone mention, you know, this is like, I'm sure there is a good one. Like, there's no doubt that there's definitely a good Hendrix biography out there. I guess for someone that I love so much, I haven't, almost surprised that I haven't heard someone be like, you like Hendrix, you got to read this. You know, usually you get that from someone and they're just like, oh, you're a big fan of so-and-so, you should read this book.
Yeah. To wrap up, you're thinking, would you say Little Wing is your favorite Hendrix song?
Oh man.
Because it's hard, but I have one that has always spoken to me for whatever reason. So I know I would consider that one my favorite. Like, if I could only listen to one Hendrix song, I would pick this one.
I'm not sure. Little Wing is up there. You know what? If I had to pick one, I would probably say Hey Joe.
Okay.
I love that song.
That is a very good one. I would say The Wind Cries Mary.
Wind Cries Mary is fantastic.
I believe that would be my favorite one. I love that song. It's, you know, it's funny though, because he did do a lot of covers too.
Yeah,
on a lot of stuff. And even Bob Dylan was like, All Along the Watchtower is not my song anymore.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like it's complete. And you listen to him, and like his is pretty good, but his sounds more like a cover of Hendrix's version than Hendrix sounds like a cover of his version.
Doesn't it really though? It's, just the yeah. way. Because when you think of All Along the Watchtower, you think of it with just that epic guitar sound and that Jimi Hendrix vocals, and it sounds like, oh, Dylan's doing an unplugged version of All Along the Watchtower. He's covering Hendrix, and yeah, like you said, I mean, Dylan totally, he basically gave the song away. He was like, Hendrix version surpassed my version in every way. And it's amazing the way he took that song and just, I mean, he turned on its head. It's a completely different song.
Oh, yeah. Have you, and a perfect example of his ability to do something like that is, I would actually say more than that, the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, yeah.
That, I have honestly probably heard the Star Spangled Banner played more his way than I have any other way. Like, but I'm not even talking like just listening to his version of it specifically. I'm talking about like I'll go to games and stuff and they will play it closer to that version than they might play it to something else.
Yeah. I mean, I do go quite a few sporting events, but no, I've definitely gone out and to events or whatever and heard it, you know, them try to replicate the Hendrix Star Spangled Banner. And it's not rare. And I think a lot of people know that as his version. It's amazing to take a song that's that important and that well known, obviously, but and to be able to attribute it to a rock artist, to someone who's not, you know, had nothing to do with the actual writing of it.
Oh yeah, yeah. For high school, we had like a pep rally, and like the first one of the year was like a mandatory one that you had to go to, and there was a kid named Josh. I can't remember his last name. A kid named Josh, who was in a band with some other kids, and they played pretty well. Like they played at the talent shows and stuff like that. As far as I know, from what I've occasionally found out through like Facebook and stuff like that, like nothing ever came from them. They went separate ways after high school and split up. But he was playing the Star Spangled Banner at the pep rally, at the start of the pep rally. And he tried to play close to the Hendrix kind of version with it on his guitar, which I always thought was really cool. That first of all, they had the balls to do that. And as I remember it, it was pretty good. Obviously it wasn't Hendrix's version, but it was cool to hear it done again in a different way, inspired by this guy, because chances are, without him, like nobody really probably would have done it that way. You know what I mean? I don't see anybody thinking like you can do that.
Right. Yeah, and I've heard other bands' recordings of it. I've heard of our like Boston do it. I've heard Smashing Pumpkins do it. And you're right. I don't think I would have heard either of those versions if Jimi Hendrix never did it.
Yeah, I don't think it would. I don't think it would exist in any other form if it wasn't for him. So it'd be interesting to see. I'd like to. If we ever figured out a way to look into alternate realities, I would love to see the alternate reality where Hendrix didn't die and continued to live and was like alive today. It'd be pretty interesting to see.
It would be. And I would hope very much so that he wouldn't be a has-been.
I was thinking about that. I don't think he would. I don't think he would be. Like, I think he would probably go more like the Keith Richards route. But I think he would also constantly be changing and evolving stuff and doing new things. So it'd be interesting to see where we were at then compared to where we're at now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like in the different timelines, but So if anybody out there has a way to look into alternate universes, let me know. I'm standing by.
Yeah, you've got two very big Hendrix fans here that would like to see what happened.
Yeah. If we could actually go into a machine and go visit with him, we'll go.
Oh, yeah. I'd risk it.
Yeah. Oh. Wouldn't be like Bones being like, you're not spreading my atoms anywhere. I'm down. So I guess we'll wrap this one up because it's taking a long time.
Yeah.
So that's it for But You're Wrong this week. I'm Keith.
I'm Greg.
And I feel like our sign-off doesn't really work anymore as we're in the second 20. So we could try to come up with something, but I figure on the spot, but I figure we'll just see if something comes up organically.
All right.
As time passes.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll end this episode and just say goodbye, everybody. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.